Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'm Paul Dottino. He's John Schmelk. We'll be here for the next hour to talk Giants football with you. You can call us up at 201-939-4513, or you can hit us up on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Now, coming up in about a half hour or so, we will have Mickey Spagnuolo of DallasCowboys.com. John and I have known him for quite a long time. He knows the Cowboys in and out, and we will start today with our previews of the Giants' opponents for the 2016 season. So each and every day of this show, we're going to pick out one of the opponents, and we're going to go into the media's, the city of that particular day to the media and find out what they're telling us about the team.
It's a lot of fun, folks. As you can see, I'm on the mend. My voice is back a little bit at least, but Paul's going to host it. I'll chime in as we go along. But, yeah, we'll start with the NFC East, which is the good place to start because obviously your division games are your most important games over the course of the season. And you have to go 4-2 in your division if you want to win the division, generally.
Yeah, at the very least.
I mean, you can go 3-3 and, you know, fall, you know what, into a division victory. That's great. But you, realistically, you have to go 4-2. And they start the season with the Cowboys. We'll kind of take the schedule in order, except for the division teams, which we'll knock out first.
Right.
Then we'll take the rest of the schedule in order from there over the next 3, 4, 5 weeks as we get closer to training camp.
Fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play.
Now, Paul, you watched that Bill Simmons thing last night, right, on HBO, you said?
I did not watch it. I heard about it.
Okay. Do you want to give a rant?
Well, here's an interesting thing, folks, and I understand that everybody's entitled to an opinion. I have absolutely no problem with that, and I know that some people will not believe that, but I really don't have a problem with anybody's opinion. What I do have a problem with is when the opinion does not have a strong foundation based on fact or what the reality is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I get ruffled, okay? Now, apparently Ben Affleck decided to say during an HBO interview with a number of nasty words sprinkled in that there was a witch hunt going after Tom Brady and Deflategate. As you know, he is a Patriots lover. Okay, I get that. Fine. You want to talk about that? Talk about that all you like. But somehow he decided to rope Eli Manning into his conversation. And he ripped Eli Manning and said that years ago, about, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago, he had done an article or done an interview with the New York Times.
Bill Pennington, right?
Bill Pennington, yep. I believe, was the author.
Good writer.
A very good writer. Very well respected.
Yes.
And in this article, Bill Pennington of the Times was writing about how Eli Manning was telling him that quarterbacks are allowed to manipulate the exterior of the footballs.
Doctor is a word I believe got used.
Well, you know what? They come out of the box, they're really slick, and you know that. You've been around them.
And that's all within the rules. That's the key.
Right. When the ball comes out, so you folks, I know some of you may not understand this, even though we've talked about the Deflategate a lot around the NFL the last 2 years. The ball has almost a slick, waxy kind of feel to it, the ripples.
Mm-hmm.
And what the teams are allowed to do, they get the shipment of balls, and every week the quarterback works on the balls with the equipment managers and says, okay, listen, we got to rub this up, scuff it up, put dirt on it, mud on it, whatever it is, to get the ripples to feel. Otherwise, you can't feel the ripples. It's just too smooth. It's like a bowling lane that's got a ton of grease on it, you know? If you ever tried doing that, it's not good. So, anyway, the point is, that's what you're allowed to do.
And you're allowed to scuff up the ball, put dirt on it, and give it some grip. That's very much within the rules.
That's why the league has the ball sent to the teams ahead of time.
Correct.
So you can do that.
Correct.
What you are not allowed to do, according to the NFL rules, is take the air out of the balls, or for that matter, overinflate the balls if you so choose. There are specs about how much air needs to be in the ball, and specifically on game day. There's nothing that I know of in the rules that indicate what you do to the ripples outside the football. So for Ben Affleck to destroy Eli Manning basically calling Eli Manning an admitted cheater because he has manipulated the footballs is inaccurate. Inaccurate. It is not a valid opinion. I needed to say that.
Everybody, thank you for joining us on Twitter. We appreciate it. You got the Paul Dottino rant. Come on. You don't get any better than that. Give us a call back. Stay tuned in thegiants.com if you want to watch the rest of the show right now. 201-939-4513. That's the phone number, and Paul got that out of his system.
Thank you. Thank you. You knew it was boiling.
I know. That's why I wanted to get to to give you the floor.
I'm glad that you did.
All right.
Because it's inaccurate. End of discussion. Goodbye, Ben Affleck. Done.
And by the way, we do not want to spend the day talking about the Deflategate.
No. That's not my point.
I want to stress that.
My point
is not our goal.
Base your opinions on facts and reality, and they're all good. Base them on falsities, and go read a comic book because that's where you belong.
Go read a comic book. Why? Because he played Batman?
You figure it out.
Affleck's actually directed a couple pretty good movies. Did you watch The Town?
No.
Oh, you would enjoy The Town. The Town was a good, good movie.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I got a little time in the next 5 weeks. Maybe I'll check it out.
The Town was very good.
Okay.
You'll like it.
Okay.
The movie, actually, the climax at the end is in Fenway Park.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's cool.
Okay.
Good movie. Anyway.
Let's give the number.
So, 201-939-4513. And I guess we got a couple calls coming up already. Before we do that, real quick on the schedule point. I know we touched on it when it came out. It's interesting to me, and the more I've looked at it, this is kind of something that kind of clicked with me. The Giants don't play in another team's building for six straight weeks between October 16th and November 20th.
Yes.
Their only road game is at the Rams in England.
And the bye thrown in.
So what that tells you is that the beginning and ending of the schedules, you're playing in other people's buildings an awful lot.
That is true.
Three out of the first five on the road,
mm-hmm.
including three, maybe your toughest road games of the year, spare the Pittsburgh game late in the year, at Dallas, at Minnesota, at Green Bay.
Yes.
Those are really tough games.
Agreed.
And then you close the season with four out of the six, final six on the road, at Cleveland, which is probably your quote-unquote easiest road game, at Pittsburgh, and then you close the season at Philly and at Washington.
You know, John, though, here's my take on this is a tad different. At the end of the season,
yeah.
Dallas and Detroit are home, and then the games against Philly and Washington, those are not painful road trips to make.
No, they're not. I agree with that.
So,
that's
in
fair.
A way, even though you're finishing with two road games, from a physical and logistical and a planning standpoint, you're not really taxing your coaching staff and your players on those two because they're the two – almost the two shortest road trips you could make. The Jets would be the shortest, and I don't know exactly what the mileage is to go to Foxborough, but between right. Foxborough and Washington, those are pretty close.
And so, Buffalo, you could throw that in the mix,
Buffalo's too. Fairly close, too.
It's a little further, though.
But you know what I'm saying, because you've been on the road trips, and you know how taxing those road trips are.
I just hope we can take the train to Washington this year. I'm tired of those Washington flights. We've had those two straight years now. Get me back on the train, but it's a holiday again. Usually it's Thanksgiving. Now they're sending us on New Year's. Get me on a damn train, will you? Does that ask you too much?
The little things that make so much difference.
All right, well, let me get to the calls here.
Paul. All right, Malik from Jersey, you're on line one and first on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, hello. How are you?
Very
What's
good.
Up, Malik?
How
are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Just have one question. One question. What are we going to do? I understand what's going on with the schedule. We have a pretty fair schedule on a front end. But what I want to know is, what are we going to do at linebacker? I mean, there's no one solidified as a legit Mike. So I wanted to know what was going on with that position.
Malik, am I missing something here, John? They have a bunch of legit Mikes. The problem is they got to find a winner.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, Brinkley showed last year in the second half of the season. He was certainly capable.
Well, and he started there for the Vikings for a number of years as well.
Sure. And Robinson had a 100-tackle season a couple of years ago for Washington.
And when he's healthy, he's been okay there.
And Shepard's also played there.
And started there for the Dolphins.
So, you know, you got three guys to choose from.
Not to mention a draft pick out of Clemson.
Who he's the unproven one.
Right. Yes.
He's the unproven one. But you got three guys who have started in this league for more than one game at the position, and no disrespect to Iwanyunga, but boy, you know, he came out of nowhere to wind up being thrust into a starting role
right.
because they didn't have any other choices. Now at least they have choices. I don't know who's going to win it. I'd say right now my bet would be on Brinkley, but I can't say I'd put the mortgage on it.
No, I mean, I think Brinkley's the incumbent. He's been there in the spring, so I think betting on him is the safe bet. I agree. But I think Keenan Robinson and Shepard have a legit shot. The longer they're in this defense, maybe they make some plays in some preseason games, maybe they can break in. We'll see.
You know what I would say, Malik, and this is an interesting take on it. You know, we know at the end of the spring session, JT Thomas came down with a leg injury, and they said he was going to have to, you know, sit out until training camp.
Nothing major.
Right, right. But that gave Robinson even more of a chance to work on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important because the versatility and the ability to mix and match guys and to get the best three guys on the field, or in some cases two when you're in the sub-package,
right.
is critical.
Yeah. And remember this too, though, Paul. He played in the 3-4 in Washington for most
Correct.
Of his career. So he was never really a true Mike until whatever he did last year when
That's
they
true.
Moved to the 4-3. So usually those inside linebackers in the 3-4, Malik, have an easier time transitioning to the outside linebacker spots in a 4-3 because you're playing in more space.
So the bottom line is, you know, the best guys are going to win the jobs, but I do think there is some flopping around that could go here. I think maybe we might be wrong just pigeonholing Robinson, saying, okay, they signed up from the Redskins. He's going to be
yeah.
the middle linebacker. I'm telling you, I kind of thought that when they signed him. I'm not so sure it's going to be that way now.
What else you got, Malik?
Yeah, because the guy, one other question, I'll take it off.
Yeah, sure.
We picked up an undrafted free agent out of San Diego State. If I'm not mistaken, he's coming in to play slot corner. I wanted to know, just because he was an undrafted free agent, and I'm hearing how good he is in the slot, is there a chance he could jump in front of Eli Apple? Because Eli Apple is not traditional
Malik,
slot corner.
San Diego State?
Are you sure you don't mean Boise State? Or you mean
Boise State, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Boise
Dion.
State,
yeah.
yes. Boise.
Yeah, Dion, he goes about 5'8", 5'9", 160 pounds, dripping wet, and he had
perfect for the slot.
He had a great, great off season, but again, shirts and shorts. Let's not get too excited. But yeah, it's a shame. It's clear he had to be the dark horse pick for me because he was an undrafted rookie free agent. The shame of it is everybody kind of saw him and mentioned him and talked about him. I don't know if he is a dark horse anymore, John, because I think everybody loves the
well,
kid.
That's because he kept making plays in front of the media.
I know.
What are you going to do?
Exactly. I wish he'd only made those plays when they weren't here. Then he could have still been my dark horse.
Thank you, Malik.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call, my man. But yeah, look, he's made some plays. And he reminds me, just in terms of his demeanor, how he goes about his business, and I said this on the air last week, and I'll say it again, and just the way he moves around, he chatters, the position he plays, his activity in practice, he reminds me of the impact that we saw Charles James make in the offseason a few years ago.
You know, one thing, John, we talked about this yesterday with Feagles. If they're going to keep six corners.
Which is what you usually.
Okay.
Well, you could only keep five if you want. Anyway.
But if Dion's the fifth, assuming that Wade's the fourth behind the big three.
Okay.
Okay. Who's the sixth right now in your mind? Who's got the edge
Boy.
On this? Is it Bennett Jackson because
no.
they might be able to swing him?
Yeah, but are you keeping three or four safeties?
Well, again.
Well, I think, well, here's the question then. How many DBs are you keeping?
You could keep
nine.
You could keep
you
10.
You could keep 10, right? I know. Let's see. Of the actual corners. Let's take a peek here.
It's important now that
Leon McFadden's actually made a couple of plays, and he's been with the twos most of the spring.
He has.
And he's a veteran. He's been in the league for 4 years. He's been around.
Doesn't have the versatility, though.
No, he's an outside player.
That's it.
Which is fine. You need outside guys. That's okay. He's 5'10", 190. I think if I had to pick a corner, I think he'd be next on my list.
McFadden mm-hmm. ahead of Bennett Jackson. Does Jackson?
Yeah, I think Jackson's a safety.
So he has a. Do you think he's got a shot to be one of the three or four safeties?
Yes,
then?
I do.
Okay.
Honestly, if I had to, that's a little strong.
It's hard.
I think he and Burhey are even right now.
Okay. Are they going to keep three or four? Because if they're keeping three, you got to make a choice.
I think they're keeping four.
Going to keep four.
I think you're keeping 10 DBs.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised,
especially if three of them are going to be rookies. I think you have to keep another couple vets in there.
I would not have a problem with that.
I think you got to go 10.
Yeah.
Especially considering you have more high-end defensive linemen this year mm-hmm. that are going to play more snaps you probably don't have to keep as many defensive linemen. So I think you keep 10 DBs.
Okay. If you do that, remember, you got to shave somebody from somewhere then. So that means you're definitely not going to keep six receivers, four tight ends.
I think you shave on defensive line.
You're going to take it out of the line.
Because I think your defensive line right now, you got four starters.
Yep.
Vernon, JPP, Hankins, and Harrison, right?
Right.
Owe, obviously, is your fifth guy.
Yep.
Bromley's your sixth guy. Okay?
Okay.
So then who else from this group are you keeping? You got to keep one other tackle, right?
I mean, right now?
Kerry Wynn, you figure is on the roster, right?
I think Wynn's going to make it.
And then you keep one tackle, and there you have your eight. Last year they had 9 or 10 defensive linemen, didn't they?
Nix could be in there. Hughes could be in there.
Correct. No, he hasn't practiced much.
No. He's been banged up. Do you value one of the
– Milhouse.
One of the rookies.
Stanley Mapong is a veteran that's been here.
You know.
Ishtak Williams, does he make the roster?
Does Williams make the –
See, to me, he's a practice squad guy to me. He's perfect for that.
I would think he would be more practice squad guy, but the other Notre Dame
might get claimed. Who knows?
What about the other Notre Dame guy?
Nix?
No, Aguara.
I think he'll have to fight for a spot.
You know, folks, this is exactly why I'm telling you, you want to watch all four preseason games and every quarter and every snap.
And all of Giants training camp live on MSG, where you get the most from all the training camp practices.
That too. Point is, John, it's like almost every spot, there's going to be fighting for spots, fighting for positions on the depth chart. This is in the last few years, folks, maybe
try
there were one or two
nine
spots.
Or 10 years.
But now,
yeah.
It's all over the place.
No, you don't know.
Really don't know. We could say this about every position. All right, who's next?
Robin in New Jersey. You're up next. Robin, how are you?
Hello?
Okay, how you doing, guys?
We're doing great, Robin. How are you?
Hello? I'm doing okay, man. How you guys doing?
Well.
Okay, I want to start off saying that you guys do a great job.
Thank you.
Keeping us informed what's going on and stuff.
Thank you, Robin. Appreciate
it. By the team. So I appreciate y'all hard work that you guys do. I got a question about... on the training camp that's coming up?
Yes, sir.
When is it, what days are it, and, like, when can, like, fans come out and, you know,
they have not
players get on?
Yeah, they have not announced yet, Robin, when training camp practices will be open to the public and when the public sessions are going to be. The players arrive, I believe, on July 28th, if memory serves.
And first practice is the 29th. We
correct.
Know that.
And you'll practice for 3 or 4 straight days. Now, they open as many practices as possible to the public. The only times they don't have practice open to the public is when there's a conflicting event and they need the parking for an event at the stadium.
Or rain,
that's true, or chance of lightning, things like that. So most of the practices should be open, Robin. I would expect most of the practices to be in the morning. That would be my guess.
They are free also, by the way.
And they are also free. And the Giants try to do some stuff to entertain the fans, too. The drum line comes out for some games. They have done autographs in the past. I know they had to change the policy last year. I'm not sure what it's going to be this year in terms of adults getting autographs. So we'll have to wait and see, Robin. They have not made that announcement yet.
Okay.
It will be on it'll be on Giants.com as soon as it's out. And
correct.
If you don't see it there, I guarantee you at some point during the show, we'll be able to talk about it.
Or you can just hit up Paul Dottino on Twitter, and he'll hold you on the whole schedule.
Go ahead.
I just got one more question about the receivers. Like, how many receivers will we keep, and who do you think the receivers will be? I can listen off air.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the call, Robin.
Another discussion Jeff and I had yesterday.
Numbers,
I'm keeping 6, John. I'm keeping 6.
I'm assuming Cruz is on the active roster, right?
Yes.
Obviously.
He's
right,
one of my 6.
Beckham, Cruz, Shepard,
Harris.
Those are your 3, and obviously Dwayne Harris. That's 4.
Right.
Okay, so those are your 4.
Now
games.
It gets sticky. Oh, boy, does it get sticky.
See, here's why I think Jeremy Davis has a good shot. He's 6'2", and he's 217.
I like Jeremy Davis.
And he's shown good hands, and Eli lavished praise on him at his press conference a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when Eli goes out of his way to say how well you know the playbook and you're in the right place at the right time, he doesn't do that generally for people. It
true.
Means you know your stuff. So I think he's in. Then it gets tough. Do you go with the veteran Miles White, who I think is a pretty good player, and he can be useful? Or does the undrafted free agent Roger Lewis out of Bowling Green make a run? I think those are 3 guys for maximum 2 spots. And you're right, I think they probably keep 6. I think that's 3 for 2. Which 2 out of those 3? Not sure. It's tough. If I had to guess, I'd go Lewis and Davis.
Wow. See, I'm inclined to go Davis. I like Lewis, and I think if he doesn't make the 53, he's practice squad for sure.
Yeah, if he doesn't get claimed,
you
which
know,
he might.
I know. I think Lewis makes it by a hair over Miles White, but the fact that they gave Miles White so many starting reps in the springtime does show me that they do like him.
No, and they trust him. I think they trust Miles White, and they should.
But I'm inclined to go Davis and Lewis for 5 and 6.
But
myself.
I think that'll be a great competition for all three guys.
And look.
And by the way, don't
Doble's in that competition too.
And also, they have a couple other wide receivers too. The Darius Poe of the world they brought in, the undrafted free agents. They got other guys in the mix too.
I think I said yesterday to Feigs that there's probably 9 guys who you could make a case for, some stronger than others. But there might be 9 receivers on this roster right now that you would have an interest in.
All right, I want to get 3 more calls in before we get to Mickey Spagnuolo at 12:30, all right? Let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie's fighting the good fight with me on this Derrick Rose trade. What's up, Charlie?
Hey, guys. Hey, this is Ben Affleck. see what I have to put up with up here with these Pat fans? Unbelievable.
You know, Paul, I think that might explain some of Charlie's neuroses. The fact that he has to deal with Patriot fans all the time, and they've a couple screws have come loose. He's a little erratic, and, you know, you start thinking bad things.
Well, suffocated by their own paranoia, those people.
I think that's a fair point. What do you got, Charlie?
Hey, I was just going to say, I know you guys talk about competition and how good it is, but I look at it the other way. For example, now, at quarterback, we don't have competition because we know – we have one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? And Dallas Cowboys don't have competition on their O-line because they know they have the 5 best guys that are already there, that are Pro Bowl level or close to it. And what I see is all this competition for all these positions shows a weakness.
Yeah, but Charlie, I think most of the competition, though, Charlie, is for reserve roles, isn't it? I mean, the only starting jobs that are really up for competition is one safety spot, maybe one linebacker spot, maybe a second, and that's pretty much it, right? I mean, all the other starting positions, we know who the guys are, right?
Well, tight end.
And tight end,
sure.
I guess. But the only reason there's there is because you have a guy that got hurt last year and the replacement was really good. It's not like the
Charlie,
one guy stumbled.
Look, before you go any further, no one's going to deny that if you have a tried and true cemented in starter who is just so good, that's not a great place to be. Of course that's a great place to be. But let's not forget, the Giants haven't made the playoffs in 4 seasons. They're in a retooling process. When you're in a retooling process, achieving competition at many spots is actually what you want. That's actually a good thing in this scenario. So I don't see why you would not like that. Do you want them just to be like not so good, not good and just okay? That's fine.
No,
is that what you
want?
No, what
I want is like at positions that we know, hey, this is our guy because he's proven it. You know, we know he's great and he's locked in. I mean, you can say right now Newhouse is a right tackle, but it isn't like because we've got 16 other guys on the offensive line who aren't better than him. We know he's not a starting right tackle, really, in this league. He's a backup. But we're stuck with him because we don't have anybody else, and we've got a bunch of positions.
Well, Charlie,
you know,
not as many as
last year, but we still have positions like that.
Yeah, but let's just make something clear. The Giants are a team that is trying to build towards something. Part of that process is competition.
We got to run, Charlie. I want to get
that's
two more
all.
Guys.
That's all I can say,
call.
Charlie. Honestly, don't be upset by it because it's a good thing. Believe me.
All right.
Be
all
well,
right, guys.
Thank
all
you,
right.
Charlie. Thank I want to make sure I get Rob and Marquise in before we get to Mickey Spagnuolo. Rob in Connecticut. You're up next. Rob, what's up?
Hey, Paul.
What's going on?
I have a thank you, an observation, and 2 quick questions.
Sure. Bring it.
The thank you is I've had 2 surgeries since draft day, and I'm okay.
Good.
But right I have
here.
To tell you, during the NFL draft, I was watching ESPN, and then on my iPad, I had you guys. And particularly that Saturday when you guys were spent, You too. you kept me laughing when I was in massive pain. So I just want to thank you guys for all you do.
We're glad. Well, not that you were hurting, but we're glad we made you laugh.
Rob, we are happy to entertain, and we're very happy you enjoyed the show.
We do try to have fun here besides informing folks. We do want to have some laughs, and I'm glad that we were able to present that to you.
Happy to do it, Rob.
You guys were on vapor under the last 2 hours of the draft. So here are my questions. So my observation and two
He's
quick
not
questions.
Wrong.
Observation is, it seems like they drafted, I think, you know, the rookie class, I think there are three guys who are captains. And it seems, you know, I hear a lot about Eli Apple's, you know, study habits and same with Darian Thompson. So it seems like this class, they made a huge effort to make sure that this rookie class was committed. And I don't know if you share that in terms of that observation. And then my other question is about the tight ends.
Yeah.
I'm just particularly interested in this tight end battle, particularly when I look at Ryan Mallick, Matt LaCrosse, and Adams, the sixth-round draft pick. Of those three guys in the OTAs, who do you see, who do you like making the team? Of those guys.
All right. Just in terms of the captain stuff, I'm not sure how many of this draft class were actually college captains, but what I will say is this. Their portfolio, their character profile was exemplary, and that was one of the things that they went into the draft trying to find.
Good football character and football IQ, I think, from Shepard.
No question.
From Goodson, from Thompson, for
and
sure. And Eli Apple was a very clean player as well in terms of his football off the and off the field stuff.
And Apple, only having 2 years at Ohio State, is the only one of the draft class that did not play a ton. All the other guys played.
Well, Goodson didn't start till his last year, right, though?
Yeah, but he was around for 4 years.
He was, yes, that's correct. Yes.
You know, Apple, 2 years, and he was gone from Ohio State. The other guys had been around their programs for the whole McGee, and that also seemed to play into the Giants'
Absolutely.
Thinking.
Absolutely.
So there is something to what you're saying, but I don't know if the word captain necessarily came into play. The other part to your question?
Tight ends.
John, there's a lot of tight ends here. You know what I think about
Malik's actually made some plays
the last
couple weeks. He's actually looked pretty good. And Matt LaCrosse has made some plays, too.
LaCrosse got himself, I believe it was a groin at the end of minicamp, and so he missed a couple of those practices. And Malik stepped in and made plays.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want guys to step up. But up until that point, I'll be honest with you, and I'm a LaCrosse guy, so maybe I'm a little shaded in his favor, but I thought he had a very good camp. He was blocking on the dummies very well. He was even lining up outside and taking some passes on the outside, which says to me they must be very happy with his development.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the call, man.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, take it easy. I want to get one more call in before we get to Mickey. Let's go to Marquise in New Jersey. Marquise, what's going on, pal? How are you?
How you doing, fellas?
Doing well, Marquise.
Hi.
How are you?
All right, I'm going to make this quick. Which Giants player is most likely to go to their first bowl this season? I'll take it off the air.
Interesting question.
First Pro Bowl,
yes.
We
Thank
talked
you, Marquise.
About
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Recently on Giants.com, John, we had a question
from
our mailbag, did we
not? It
was either
a mailbag or a fact or fiction or something.
And
like
I
that,
immediately
yeah.
went to Weston Richburg.
That was my pick, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard not to like this guy.
Right.
I mean, really, it's hard not to like him. He has a work ethic. He's got the skill set. He's got the mentality. You know, and he has shown really good upside in his first two seasons in the league. So, to me, that's a natural progression for him as a potential Pro Bowl guy. I mean, I don't know. Do you want to say Justin Pugh? He's been moved around a lot. It's hard for him to dig his feet into one spot, although now he's the left guard. But it's been harder for him to do that than let's say, Richburg, even though he's had to play two positions in 2 years. Richburg is a natural center. He is where he belongs. So I would say Weston Richburg is my runaway favorite for a Giant player to make his first Pro Bowl this season. Want to get to some Twitter comments in the meantime before we go to more phone calls. And, of course, Mickey Spagnuolo coming up in just a bit. Let's see. We have Ben who says, awesome show. Great job, guys. Thank you so much, Ben. Again, you're one of our loyal guys on Twitter and
on
phones.
We love Ben.
So we appreciate you very much for sticking with us
Absolutely.
Throughout the offseason. Let's see. We have Nathaniel says, I agree. Can we say Dak? I'm not sure I totally understand what that means.
Well, you got to view the conversation. Maybe we got to see if that's going to reply to something.
He wants to talk about, I don't think I understand.
I think talking about how, if Romo might get hurt, and if he does, Dak Prescott will be the quarterback. That's why he says Dak.
Okay.
I think that's where that's going.
Okay. Well, we'll find out more from Mickey in just a minute. On
yes,
that, won't we?
We will.
We have anybody else? Oh, we have here, let's see here. Vincent Rappasardi says, I have no idea that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon grew up together. Well, that's nice. Oh, here's one. Here's one from Nathaniel. If D-line is creating havoc, these linebackers will look good at what they do. That was part of the plan, John.
Well, the D-line helps everybody.
Upgrade the D-line, especially the guys in the middle.
Right.
With Snacks and Hankins hopefully having a bounce-back season, that it will make the linebackers, especially whoever's in the middle, more productive.
Complimentary football, my friend.
You know, no question.
Complimentary football.
No question. It's like dominoes. Here's A.J. Marshall wants to know which position is a question mark heading into training camp. I think we've tried to explain to you there are several positions on the depth chart, the back end of the depth chart, that are really up for grabs.
Yeah, I think
But starters?
It depends what he means by question mark. Does he mean question mark like, is the starter going to be really good? What the depth is? I think there's like, you know what I mean? It's like, what does he mean by question mark? I think that's the question. Anyway.
I'll say this. I think there are legitimate choices now to choose from, where in the past – it was kind of like, okay, I guess if that guy wins the job, he wins the job.
All right, we have our good friend Mickey Spagnuolo on the line from DallasCowboys.com as we begin our preview of the Giants' 2016 opponents. Mickey, are you enjoying your off time from football for a month and a half before the players get back?
I'll start enjoying it even more in about a day when I get away from here for a while.
Well, then I'm happy we called you when we did, Mickey. And, you know, usually
just in time.
And you know, usually when we have you on, I like to make this a Romo-free interview zone for you because I know that's all you talk about down there in Dallas. But I have to break our rule this time. Give us a lowdown, and I know you're not a doctor, but I'm sure you've seen all the reports on everything. Everyone seems to assume that Tony Romo is quote-unquote injury-prone now and that clavicle is waiting to break again. Give us a lowdown. He had the surgery this year to relieve pressure off of it. What does that do for him? What does it mean? What do the Cowboys think about his outlook in terms of staying healthy? Just give us the lowdown on Romo's health moving forward and how at risk he is for getting hurt again in that same area.
Yeah, I would imagine if you get hit just right, you know, any quarterback's at risk to break a collarbone. If I tell you what I've seen in the off season, he's having no problems throwing the football. Mm-hmm. He was able to do everything that everybody else did once they started the off season program about the middle of April. Went through all the practices, threw the ball extremely well. Now, to explain the surgery, what exactly they did, and it wasn't to go in and fix anything. It was more of a preventive measure. And what they did is they went in and shaved about, I'd say like a half an inch off the end of his left collarbone, the one that he ended up fracturing twice last year. And that was to create more space. That way, if you get pile drive into the ground on your left shoulder, the bone has a little more space to move in instead of like previously jamming into your shoulder socket and creating the fracture.
Okay, so
the first fracture was, you know, okay, you broke the bone.
Right.
It calcified over, and when he came back, and when you calcify over on a bone, the actual bone gets stronger and a little bigger. Well, where he broke it was the part that calcified, not the original break. So it was almost two breaks in the same spot.
No.
I don't think they're sitting there, you know, just worried to death that, okay, he gets hit, he breaks a collarbone. But again, you know, what if he breaks the right one? What if he sprains a knee? I think it's in that category in their realm of worry about him getting injured again.
Mickey, let me ask you this. How much do you expect him to play in the preseason? And then as part two to that question, how much better prepared are the Cowboys if he does get knocked out?
Well, that remains to be seen. We'll start the second part of that because at this point, Kellen Moore is the backup quarterback. Now, I continue to say he's the backup quarterback until he proves in training camp and preseason he's the backup quarterback. I don't know that you can go on just what you've seen in the two games that he played last year, or the two starts, I guess, that, okay, yeah, he's good to go. You solved your backup quarterback spot. I think he's competing with the field out there with whoever might be available, and I still think there'll be some quarterbacks made available because of the number of quarterbacks drafted this year. They're probably going to knock somebody else off a roster. As for what he does in the preseason, I think it'll be normal. I think the first game, he gets a series, 10 plays, 12 plays, something like that. The second game, maybe a quarter. You'll play him in the third game, and then he sits in the fourth, just kind of the way they've always been doing it. And let's remember, he needs some activity. He only played in four games last year, and he only finished two of those. So he needs his snaps. He needs to get back in the swing of things. And I think they've got to treat it, and they can't baby it, that, oh, no, we can't risk this. I think he's got to be prepared to play, and I think they learned that if you remember how the 2014 season started, when he did very little in training camp, did very little in preseason, and then was horrible in the season opener against San Francisco. So I think they value giving him some playing time, knowing that he needs it after the extended period of inactivity last year.
You know, Mickey, and I think obviously the Cowboys hope when Romo does play, they don't have to have him drop back as many times as he has in seasons past because of the running game. So let's get to that. They have a lot of running backs on the roster. We know McFadden's going to be out now for a couple months with that bizarre elbow injury that he suffered over the long weekend a few weeks ago. They bring in Alfred Morris, Lance Dunbar coming off ACL surgery. And, of course, the elephant in the room is Ezekiel Elliott. You spend the high pick on a guy like that, he's going to play. How much is he going to share the load here, Mick? Are they just going to, quote-unquote, maybe for lack of a better term, run him into the ground and just say, look, you're getting 350 carries a year, you're going? Or are they really going to split this up among the running backs on the roster?
Oh, I think he'll get the majority. And since you brought that up, and part of your question about Romo is how better are they prepared to handle if he gets hurt? I mentioned the backup quarterback. Well, let's put it this way. They're better prepared to handle Romo's absence with a backup quarterback if Dez Bryant's on the field.
Yeah.
They're better to handle missing your starting quarterback if your running back, whoever it is, can rush for more than four touchdowns. Because when you look back to last year, the guy that led the Cowboys in rushing touchdowns, and I believe you guys saw the last time he played, was Joe Randle.
Oh, boy.
Okay, with four, he played six games. So you can look at whatever Darren McFadden did last year, and, you know, God bless him, he rushed for 1,000 yards and didn't really start until the seventh game. But he only rushed for three touchdowns. Look at what Ezekiel Elliott does. Look what he did at Ohio State. It wasn't the yards. It was the touchdowns the guy ran for.
Right.
It was the guy that could break a, you know, 60-yard touchdown. People aren't catching him. Or he can bull his way in from 3 yards out. So I think the combination of having Dez Bryant healthy, having a running game that can actually score touchdowns, certainly will help if you're missing your starting quarterback. Now, if you're missing him for 12 games again, well, I don't know if that'll work. But to get through a couple games, what everybody needs to remember is, you know, Brandon Whedon never got to play with Dez Bryant. Brandon Whedon, I think, only played 1.5 games with Lance Dunbar. You mentioned him. I don't know that Matt Cassel ever played with a healthy Dez Bryant. So there was a lot of things missing last year other than Tony Romo. But to go back to your running back question, you know, it was a matter of time before Ezekiel Elliott start getting first-team snaps, it was a matter of time before they named him a starter. I don't know how what that time period was going to be, but you don't get a guy with the fourth pick in the draft and say, well, I got a rotation. That's a bunch of baloney. He's going to be the starter, and he'll get however much he can handle. And watching them practice, they threw a lot of packages at him in the mini camp and the OTAs, and it never looked like he was wandering around going, well, shoot, I don't know what I'm supposed to do or where to go. He's a pretty sharp kid. So, you know, I don't know how they get these other guys into the game, what they do. You mentioned Lance Dunbar. I don't even know if he'll be ready for the start of the season. And what everybody forgets about him, and he was a nice little toy in this offense that got taken out of when they were leaning on him when there was no Romo and no Dez Bryant. Well, he tore his patellar tendon and his ACL.
Ooh.
They fixed the patellar tendon in October. They didn't surgically repair the ACL until December. So my guess is he starts training camp on PUP, and then we'll see where it goes from there. Alfred Morris, I think, has been a pleasant surprise. I had this vision of the Alfred Morris I've seen in Washington, kind of a lumbering power back. Well, he dropped some weight. He's around, I think he said last time, talked to him, he was around 220, 221.
Wow.
And he looked quicker and faster and shiftier. And so I think that bodes well for him. You know, and you mentioned McFadden with the elbow surgery. You know, everybody's around here, well, you got to trade one of these guys. You can't keep all these running backs. And I always say, and I've got this philosophy, just when you think you have too much depth at a position, that position suffers an injury. And then you're sitting there going, oh, my goodness, do I have enough? Because right now, you know, when they start training camp, if I'm correct on Dunbar, McFadden's not going to be there. So you got Ezekiel Elliott, you've got Alfred Morris, and Darius Jackson, the guy they drafted in the sixth round.
Yeah, it's today's NFL, man. You can never have enough of a good thing, period, no matter what position it is. Dr. Mickey Spagnuolo joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I want to read a headline to you, Mickey, that I found on foxsports.com from just a short time ago. It says, Dez Bryant pulls off ridiculous catch despite still recovering from foot. I'm sure you were there to see it. All right, so how does Dez Bryant look, and is this foot at all a concern?
I don't believe it is at this point. They're being very cautious with him. I think the word Jason Garrett described was deliberate. There's no sense rushing him. He rushed himself last year, tried to do too much too soon. This year, they put a governor on him. They did the surgery, did the bone graft on his foot. The ankle was repaired. The ankle's fine. I think the worry was, let's not do anything to ruin the bone graft on his fifth metatarsal again. He's running hard. They just kept him out of basically everything. He got into before they start the OTA practice, the mini camp practices, they would do like a short walkthrough. He was part of that. And then when they went to team drills, he didn't take part in any of that. Towards the end of the mini camp, he did a couple one-on-one drills. My understanding was they told the DBs, don't even get close to him. Which didn't make him happy, by the way.
You know what, Mickey? To be honest with you, the Giants got the same situation with Victor Cruz trying to come back. You know, he's running in shirts and shorts against air, and everyone's holding their breath, and they're watching him run, and he looks good, but nobody really knows until somebody gets in his grill.
Well, and what happens is, I think at this time, since you don't have to play a game till September 11th, is you don't want them to do too many, make these guys recovering do too many steps that aren't premeditated. You know, so you can go out and do catch against air, run a route, catch the ball, get some timing in, that's fine. But at some point, you do have to play football.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, when he came back, or even, you know, he missed time in training camp last year from the holdout, and he wasn't used to playing football. So you go up in the end zone, you know, in the opener, and you make a spectacular catch that you can't practice. You can't practice landing in the back of the
That's
end
right.
zone on off balance with three guys nipping at your feet, and get your body used to that stuff. So I think once they get to training camp, they will turn him loose. Not completely, but a little bit at a time, little bit at a time, so you get used to playing football again. And again, to me, this is why the NFL, the NFLPA have done a disservice to these players, because they get out there, they're not used to playing football, and I'm not trying to sound like old man, good old days Mickey, but they're not used to playing football, and now you're doing things that you haven't, your body hasn't gotten used to, and I think it makes them more susceptible to injuries.
Never worry about that, because this is old school, Tatino. You are singing my song. It is quite all right. You and I can go have a cup of Geritol after the show, okay? It's cool. Trust me.
Mickey, I want to hit on two more things on the offense real quick before we go to the defense, but I think that's where the Cowboys probably have a lot of questions that we want to hit on. Real quick, did the Cowboys think Terrence Williams last year having to take on the mantle of being the guy might help him this year being a better number two? And also, progress of Lael Collins. He had to start last year for you guys. He had some highlight reel plays, but I think there were some questions as to his reliability and consistency. Improvement from those two guys heading into this year.
Well, Lael Collins, I don't think there's a worry there. He looks like he – and you know what happens to guys in their first full off season. He looks better. He looks like he's readjusted his weight. Yeah, they're pretty happy with him. So full steam ahead with him. Terrence Williams has got a lot of snaps in the off season with Dez not participating in team, along with Bryce Butler, who they acquired, you know, a couple games into the season and really never had a training camp with him. Finally got into a game and looked like, hey, this kid can play, and then he pulled a hamstring, tried to come back too soon, so I'm not sure he was ever healthy. So
right.
Those two guys actually benefited from Dez being held out of team. Would they like a similar performance from Terrence Williams as the second receiver? You know, what got lost is, okay, he's probably not your lead receiver. He's not your first receiver. But as a second receiver, if I can get 52 catches which was a career high, by the way, for him, for 870-some yards, which was a career high, you'd be happy. Now, what happened was his touchdowns went down. It went down from, I think it was 8 to 3 or 4, something like that. He's still a threat. He's still a deep threat. I think Bryce Butler will challenge him for snaps. Maybe not the starting spot, but snaps in different situations. And it'll be interesting to also see. I think, you know, Cole Beasley's got his spot, who, by the way, also had a career year last year with 52 catches also. And then I think that what they would like to do is expand the role of Lucky Whitehead, the kid that made it as a rookie free agent last year, and they basically used him on a lot of junk plays, a lot of, you know, the jet sweep type things. But I think he's a pretty good receiver, and you want to get the ball in his hands. So from a wide receiver core with those five guys, I think, you know, they're probably pretty solid.
Mickey, you know, it's clear to me that with Elliott, with that line, with the guys on the outside, Witten is still around. God knows if he's ever going to get old and retire. if Romo stays healthy, there's quite a formidable offense there. I'm going to ask you for a quick thumbnail before we let you go. Defensively, though, I don't see a lot of bite in the pass rush, and I'm not a big fan of the corners in the secondary. I think, you know, with McClain and Lee, if they're both healthy and they're both playing 16 games, the linebackers, to me, are the strength of this defense.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, as much as you play nickel in the league now, you don't even worry about the strong side guy. He's just kind of a guy. But you're absolutely right. But you know what? In 2014, when they went 12-4, the question mark going into the season was the defense. When they finished 2014, the question mark going into 2015 was the defense. Well, it's still the question mark going into 2016.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed.
Yeah.
But I think what's changed, if you think about this, is I think the defensive personnel is better right now than it was in 2014 when they went 12-4. If you think about it, and you're going to have to help me here because I'm going to forget his name. Jeremy Mincy started at one defensive end.
Right.
The other defensive end was George Selvey.
Right. Yeah.
Okay? Those were their two starting defensive ends that year. And Mincy led the team with six sacks, which I think, if
sounds
I remember
familiar.
Right, looking at it, tied for the least amount of sacks to lead this team since sacks became a statistic in 1982.
Yeah, those of us around these parts have also
seen remember Sean Lee missed that entire season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you.
So if they can get through those first four games, and the assumption is DeMarcus Lawrence is going to be suspended, it's still under appeal, and for some reason no sentence has come down. Maybe it gets reduced. I don't know, but it's going to be four games at the most. Randy Gregory, again, four games. They got to get through those first four games. They signed a restricted free agent, Benson Mayoa. Unfortunately, he had a little scope, missed the mini camp, but they expect him to be ready for training camp. Kind of a speed rusher, kind of a, you know, one of these guys that you sign as an upside guy without much history. So we'll see what happens there. The one injury that bothered me in the offseason was their third-round draft choice, Malik Collins. He looked like he could step in and really help at that three technique. And if he was as good as it looked like he could be, then Tyron Crawford could have moved outside that first month of the season and helped him at defensive end. But he broke his fifth metatarsal. And so it doesn't look like he'll be ready till at the soonest, the middle of training camp, maybe the end, right before the season starts. So, there's a lot of unknown at that defensive line. And to me, if you improve the defensive line, you don't have as many question marks in your secondary. I think Byron Jones just playing free safety is going to help that secondary out immensely.
I like it.
And then here's the other question. Everybody's like, okay, well, Orlando Scandrick's back. Well, is he? He's coming off an ACL. Is he back fully? Is he ready to go to be the guy he once was? Or is it going to take some time? So, yeah, I think the biggest concern right now is just how well that secondary will play. But, again, if you can't get more than 31 sacks, your secondary is probably not going to play all that well.
No.
Mickey, I have two real specific ones for you before we say goodbye. You mentioned Jones. You said he's going to play free safety. Are they still going to utilize him in packages, though, playing man-to-man in the slot and outside, or is he going to be their legitimate free safety, and they're going to leave the corner play to Scandrick, to Claiborne, to Carr, which, by the way, I thought was also a surprise. I think most people expected a lot of changes in the cornerback core from last year. They ended up bringing everybody back.
Well, the only thing they were really unhappy with Carr was his base salary. if he was making what now he's making, although he has incentives to get back to where he once was, I don't think it would have been an issue.
Right.
Morris Claiborne healthy, I still believe, and I may be blind, I still believe he could be a really good cornerback, but the problem is he's never stayed healthy. And then, you know, I mentioned Scandrick. So if you can get those three guys healthy and playing, I think Byron Jones is your center fielder. If you play single safety high, Byron Jones is back there. And then you figure out what to do with the other guys and what they were working on in minicamp OTAs. And by the way, Scandrick didn't participate in any of that. He's another guy they're treating deliberately. They need a backup slot guy. You know, if Scandrick goes inside, if he gets hurt, okay, who's my backup in the slot? That's something they got to figure out in training camp. So, yeah, I can give you a long list of things they've got to figure out in training camp, but I'm guessing that's not much different than most teams when you're looking at the back end of your roster.
Mickey, I couldn't agree with you more, and especially in this NFC East, because every single one of these teams has question marks.
And, Mickey, real quick, I know you mentioned Randy Gregory suspended. But even when he played last year, he really didn't give the team much production as a pass rusher. Has he looked better in the spring and the summer when he does get back from that suspension? What are the expectations from the team and the type of impact he might be able to have?
Yeah, I think that, there was another guy as a rookie, got hurt early, and I don't know if he ever was the same. He was one of those guys where he was always a half a step away from a sack, and he didn't get any. But I watch him in these drills, and I do our internet show with Nate Newton, And Nate was saying the other day, he goes, man, he's got some skills to do that little drill where they run around in that circle and they have to bend like they're trying to get around the end.
Yeah.
And he does it effortlessly. Now it's a matter of can he get to the quarterback and get some sacks? They get him on the field, I still think he can play, and I think he can be awfully good. Now we'll see if he's matured enough to handle living as an NFL player and not acting like he's a kid in college anymore.
Mickey, I can tell you, Giant fans are tired of playing Dallas week one of the season. Do Cowboy fans feel the same way or no?
Well, I guess we got the NFL to blame for that season opener once again. They were trying to do the 15th anniversary of 9/11 and kind of recreate Cowboys and the Giants. So I think that was the reason why they put that game on national TV and were looking for that matchup. I don't know. I've seen a lot of football. I've seen a lot of guys play, but better buckle your chin strap when the ball's handed to Ezekiel Elliott.
I tell you what, Mickey, we always enjoy the Giants-Cowboys games, especially because we get a chance to see you and talk to you.
And
so
at least it's not
again.
A night game, no overnight flight.
Yeah, that's
thank
true,
goodness.
Too. Thanks for making it a day game.
Yeah, right? Seriously.
Thanks, Mickey.
Okay, guys, have a good day.
Good, great stuff, Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com.
You know, it's funny because, John, we go around the league all the time and we talk to all these folks. And what I love about Mickey is he understands, he's truthful, he's been around a long time.
Wait, hold on. I mean, there's so many things that you love about Mickey.
He's
old school.
I do.
He's a paisan.
He's terrific.
I mean, all these things go together that makes him one of Tatino's guys.
They all go together. And I know that there are Giants fans out there watching the show who probably say, oh, you know, I don't want to hear about Dallas. Well, you got to hear about them because they're in the division.
And you better beat them if you want to win the division.
That's exactly right. And the best way to compete against somebody is to know as much as you can about them. So from a Giants fan's perspective, I hope you soaked up a lot of that because he gave you a lot of information.
Especially on Dez and Romo. Good medical information,
you know,
there.
And I will tell you, if you didn't know it before, you know it now. They got a lot of questions too because that's the way it is in this league.
And by the way, it sounds like they're going to give the ball to Ezekiel Elliott an awful lot.
It sure does. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
He was so much ahead of every other running back in this draft.
And frankly, besides Todd Gurley, pretty much every running back the last 5 or 6 years in the draft.
Yeah. He's really good. So we will see. They got to ride that pony as much as they possibly can. Do we have any more calls, Matt, on the line?
No, probably not.
All right, so let's
makes
go back
sense,
to Twitter.
Though. We have a guest.
Well, we had and he was a real good one. All right, let's go back to Twitter and see. I just erased my Giants chat. Nice job, Tatino.
I have a problem because my Twitter is inundated with Derek Rose stuff.
All right,
so
here
it's
going
to be very hard for me to find any
We have
Giants
one
stuff.
Here. Nathaniel says, don't say get through the first four as if we aren't in them. So I guess he was upset with the thought that the Cowboys have the Giants among those first four games, and if they get through them, that would mean they beat the Giants. And I appreciate that comment. We weren't trying to say it in that vein.
Well, no. I mean, I think Mickey said it, not us. I think Mickey said the Cowboys need to try to get through those first four games. I think he said it.
In any event.
And I think by that, he just means they need to figure out a way for the defense to not be terrible until those two guys get back on the
Giants
field.
The Giants wouldn't mind if the Dallas defense is terrible.
That
in
is
week
correct.
One.
And by the way, the Giants and Cowboys have been involved in many high-scoring shootouts.
That's
over the years. There are always these freak show games. One team turns over five times. The next time, the other team turns it over six times. They're unpredictable messes.
And there is a reason why NBC loves to pick a Giants-Cowboys game every single year, okay? Because the points and the ratings go right through the roof because of all the excitement and the fireworks that go on during those games. Let's see here. Freddie says, Elliott doesn't scare me because it's going to be awfully hard to run against this Giants defense when you have Snacks and Big Hank.
They may run it outside.
I would try.
God, that's what I would do if I were them. I wouldn't run it at those two mammoths.
No.
No, I would not try to run it at those two guys.
Not a good idea. By the way, Bill Norris, you'll see that John.
I already wrote back, you're welcome.
John moved the sign. He didn't like the way the placement was on the wall.
Well, it should be with the other predictions, and it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I had to put one up yesterday. I don't know
did
if you saw
you?
It, John.
Well, here we go. Christian.
Yes.
3-3 NFC East, 10-6 overall.
That's what he said.
Well, that's a very good record out of division there.
We have Mr. Still Bleeding Blue. That's a heck of a name.
Mr. Still Bleeding Blue.
I don't remember seeing him on the show before.
Neither.
I haven't heard too much about the wide receiver we signed from overseas. I think it's Doble. How is his progress? you know, that's the problem. He's raw.
Yeah, I know.
And how quick is he going to develop over the course of August?
Practice squad, man. Practice squad.
It would seem that's the most logical place for him.
If he beats out, you know, Jeremy Davis or Poe or
Lewis.
Niles White. That's tough.
He's got a hill to climb.
It's tough.
Not impossible, but
tough.
A hill to climb.
Very tough.
But I will say this. The reviews so far have been positive, just that he's raw. So we'll see what the learning curve is. Let's see here. Ben says again, awesome show. Great job, guys.
Interesting. Ben said he had the same surgery for his right shoulder, had 9 millimeters shaved off of his shoulder socket to create space for his rotator cuff. So I guess that's something that they do to try to prevent injuries. Sounds like fun.
Oh, yeah.
Cutting bone, that sounds like real pleasant.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Ben's really having a good time on the computer today. He mentions quarterback Michael Hunter and safety Andrew Adams as solid possibilities
for
practice squad.
Could be. They have a lot of practice squad candidates.
And by the way, it's going to be 10 again this year.
Yes.
Okay.
And you still have those two spots that you can use for guys with more
veteran
playing
guys.
Time, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's a cool thing.
Yep.
And I will say this. And I've said this before on my Twitter, and I think I've said this on the show too, John, when you weren't with me. I believe that this crop of young guys is the best crop that the Giants have had in any recent June.
Just undrafted free agents or including the draft class?
I'm talking about both.
The whole
draft
class
plus the undrafted free agents. I think it's the best crop that I've seen in June in several years. And as a result, I think they're going to have a hell of a practice squad. I really do.
I think the early results are very positive.
Yeah. And please.
I want to see it when the pads come on. But the early results are positive.
And I just say this, folks, before we go, because we are running out of time. I would just add this one caveat.
Yes.
Practice squad, many times, a good part of that practice squad are simply bodies that you're working with at practice. They're not legitimate prospects.
Right. For example, the Giants like to have a mobile quarterback on their practice squad to mimic mobile quarterbacks. Not necessarily a guy you're developing.
A smurf receiver.
Correct.
You know. You want those kinds of guys to work against them.
Yeah, you want somebody to be Cole Beasley when you go in your practice.
I really believe that this year the Giants practice squad is going to be dominated by legitimate prospects.
I hope so.
Who they think are going to be developmental players. I think that's a really good sign.
Now, Paul will try to get back in here tomorrow to host with Lance. Otherwise, Lance will be solo. Paul will be running in from a doctor's appointment. He'll do his best to get it. Otherwise, it'll be Lance by himself. It'll be either Eagles or Redskins preview tomorrow. We're still working on that. See who we can manage to get on the show. And then we'll continue next week as we continue to preview the teams on the Giants' schedules. By the way, just a heads up, is early in advance, we are closed the week of the 4th of July. So no shows between July 4th. And July, I guess that's 8th.
Can I hang
so
around the facility anyway?
I'm sure they could put you to work, like breaking dirt in the back to work on the field. You can, you know, tear some walls down with a sledgehammer.
Can I paint the lines, please?
No, you can't paint the lines. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk.
See ya.
We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a good one.